Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast. I'm Carrie Weber, assistant editor for America Magazine, and I'm here today with Amy Ullman, who is the director of the Fordham Law School Institute on Religion, Law, and Lawyers' Work, and a member of the Focolare movement. She recently wrote for our magazine about the economy and justice, as discussed in Pope Benedict's latest encyclical, Caritas in Veritate. In the encyclical, Pope Benedict uses the phrase economy of communion, which is familiar to Amy, as it also describes a specific project within the Focolare movement in which for-profit businesses work to become more justice-oriented. Amy, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Sure. Maybe you could tell me a little bit about the Focolare movement in general. A lot of people may not be familiar with that.
The Focolare began during World War II in Italy with a group of young girls who were realizing that all of their dreams were crumbling under the bombs in Trent. And they asked themselves, is there an ideal that we can live for that no bomb can destroy, and discovered God is love. They would bring the little book of the Gospels with them to the bomb shelters, and the founder, Chiara Lubich, would open the Gospels, and they discovered together that this could really be a way of life. And so they started to live the words of the Gospel one by one and realized that it provoked a real transformation in their way of being with each other, in their way of building a life of community in their city. And from there, they discovered a particular calling to work for unity in the world. And so the tiny group grew into a large community that then spread over time to other countries. And now, I think, serves as a vehicle for concretely building unity in the world.
And in what way are they concretely building unity? And what kind of unity? Is it a unity within cities, among religions?
Well, it starts from that effort to just concretely love whoever's next to you. And so the various, as we call it, dialogues opened out based on building relationships of love with whoever was around. And so now there are actually five different dialogues, one for building a stronger unity within the Catholic Church. The second path and commitment is to work for ecumenical dialogue, for unity among Christians of different traditions. And then there's also a very, very developed and strong effort for interreligious dialogue. And so depending on the country and the particular religions in Japan and in various countries where there are large Muslim populations, here in the United States also a very concerted effort to work to build those kinds of bridges. And then also the Focolare went behind the Iron Curtain in the early 60s, and so opened up an effort to build bridges with people who don't have a particular religious point of reference. And then there's also a very thoughtful effort to thread out what does the dialogue with culture look like today. And I think the economy of communion and other projects on the level of psychology or law or sociology are working to, I think, open out the paths that the Second Vatican Council opened before us of the dialogue with culture in the world and the effort to really respond to the hopes and the worries and the anxieties of people today through that kind of work as well.
Sure. Now, the economy of communion, could you explain a little bit about how that works within the larger movement of the Focolare movement?
The economy of communion came to life when the Focolare founder, Chiara Lubich, visited Brazil in 1991. And it was really a result of a brainstorm with the community there that had a real desire to meet the material needs of the community there. And so they were actually reflecting on the encyclical Centesimus Annus, which was just out that year, and realized that if putting together their creativity and their resources, the idea that came out would be to start regular for-profit businesses that could then share the profits three ways. One would be to meet the material needs of the poor in the community. The second would be for educational projects that foster a culture of giving. And the idea there is that without new people who are able to live gospel values in their daily lives, it's really hard to have a new perspective on economy. And then the third would be to go back into the development of the business. And so initially they thought, well, this might be a solution in Brazil. But then the idea really caught on like wildfire. And so now there are about 750 businesses throughout the world that follow this model.
And about how big are the businesses that participate? And I guess what are some of the things that separate these business models from a typical capitalist business model?
Most are small and medium-sized. Some actually, though, have more than 100 employees, so are larger. But the idea is not to remove themselves from the market, and so also to be in the middle of all of the tensions and problems and questions that regular businesses face, but with a desire to live them according to this value structure, and also this bigger picture and bigger understanding that profit can be used as a vehicle for good in the community. And so they really fit well within this kind of hybrid model in that they function according to the rules of for-profit businesses, and I think also highlight some of the positive potential of capitalism, but I think really make a very strong and clear statement that there is room for values within a market structure as well and for a bigger picture of service to humanity.
Sure. And so why do you think Pope Benedict XVI chose to use that term of economy of communion in his encyclical? Was it a direct reference to this movement? Was it a direct reference to the idea of this movement?
Well, I think the economy of communion has been around now for 20 years. And so I think it is a ready example that many scholars are also talking about and thinking about. And there actually is a school of economy of communion scholars that are working through what do the principles mean for management, for how we think about profit. So I think it was an example that was concrete and available, but I think also he's flagging the larger idea that it's not just a kind of technical structure, but it's also a cultural statement, and it's a way of thinking about how do we tap into the deepest cultural and value resources in order to rethink not just technical structures, but who we are and how we're connected throughout the world and how the economy fits into that larger picture.
Can you offer an example of a specific project or a specific business that's been particularly successful using this economy of communion model?
Well, here in the United States, there's an environmental engineering consulting business called Mundell and Associates. And I think, I'm not sure how many employees, but One of the things that's interesting about that business is they are a regular business working with very, you know, scientific and professional standards and really struggling with all of the questions that businesses have to face, and have managed to think about how can gospel values be applied concretely in all of their relationships. And so I was just at a conference this summer where they were talking about the kinds of choices that they were going to make in terms of the location of their offices. And they decided to go to one of the less developed and poorer parts of town in order to contribute in some way to building up that community. And so also paying attention to the smaller businesses around them, to the religious communities, and began to work to build really very thick and respectful relationships with their employees or with their customers, but also with the community around them. And so I think it's an example of how businesses are most in their vocation when they're thinking about all of the relationships that surround them. And so they're a particularly, I think, successful example of how thick the model is, that it's not just a question of distributing profits in order to relieve material poverty, but of asking questions about how can our values transform every relationship that a business might touch, from employees to various layers of management to suppliers to neighbors to just to people in the community generally.
And how would someone who doesn't have a business or isn't part of a business that is specifically participating in this movement help to support that movement?
Well, I think the economy of communion is really just the tip of the iceberg of a larger project to foster a culture of giving. And so within the Focolare, but I think also generally, there's really a thirst to dig into how can my ordinary life reflect and be permeated by this commitment to live according to the principle that humanity is one family. And so I think that for Focolare people, and I think there's also a resonance in many forums within the church, to ask ourselves questions about what does this mean for how I shop, what does this mean for how I share my resources, how do I think about how things are produced. And so it's a set of larger questions, not just about justice, but about the call to live as one human family. And so I think it's a commitment that can be expressed in many different ways. And so, I mean, from the most concrete, people can buy products from these types of businesses, not just economy of communion businesses, but others who are making this larger commitment to think about how does our business relate to the common good and to building up the common good in many ways. But also asking ourselves questions about lifestyle. And I think what's unique about the approach to what Chiara Lubich called the culture of giving is the sense that it's not about sacrifice or about philanthropy. It's about just the logical consequence that if we are one family and if my fulfillment is in living according to those commitments of being part of one family, then my real happiness and my fulfillment lie in this attitude of sharing and of giving. And so actually, when I share my resources, my attitude toward my neighbors with whom I can share my resources is really one of gratitude, because my neighbor is that possibility to build these relationships of communion which lead to my own fulfillment. So it's, in a sense, I think it's a little bit of a challenge to the idea that we have to be altruistic and sacrifice and take a more sort of sacrificial approach to how we think about the economy, and to start from the premise that if we are one family, then we want to live like that, and our fulfillment as human beings is really in living like that.
Now, as someone who's participated in this movement and been an active part of it, how did you feel when you saw this reference in the encyclical?
Well, I think just it was kind of within the context of the encyclical as a whole. Mm-hmm. I was very touched by what I see as Pope Benedict's invitation to see development as part of humanity's journey to unity. And so I think my sense of how the economy of communion as a specific project fits in was my kind of joyful and in some ways excited reaction to that was really nested within this larger sense that if we can see the work that we're doing for economic and social development, the work that we're doing together to foster that as part of the direction that humanity needs to go and as part of our fundamental vocation, then I think we'll be able to pursue that with a much deeper sense of conviction and commitment and a sense of how it all hangs together. And so I think the encyclical does a lot of that work for us. And so I see the economy of communion and many of the concrete and practical projects that the Focolare is bringing together, but together with many, many other positive projects within the church, as really a vehicle for implementing that. And so it was a reaction, a joyful reaction, and I guess a tremendous sense of hope. I think people are looking for a way to make a change and a way to live their lives concretely as an expression of their commitments. And so I think it's offering a number of paths for that.
Sure. The Focolare movement also offers a path of an actual community. Is that correct? People living together mm-hmm. as a way of living out these values that you're talking mm-hmm. about. Could you tell me a little bit about those?
Okay. The Focolare began actually in this story under the bombs in Trent in World War II, when this little group of girls, because their families had fled to the mountains, found themselves in a little apartment. And so it almost began by chance. And so people would come to this little apartment, and because of the atmosphere of warmth and of family that they found, they called it, Focolare is actually a nickname, and it means hearth or family fireside. And so that's where the name Focolare comes from. And it does refer to particular houses, or actually the Focolare houses tend to fit into the environment where they are. So they'll look like any other house on the block, or depending on, or in the various countries, and it could be a hut, or it could be an apartment in a skyscraper. And so the idea is to have a place where men or women who are consecrated to God come together with the commitment to keep an atmosphere of mutual love, so as to welcome the gift of unity, which this initial group, and this continues, experienced as the presence of Christ in the community, the presence of Jesus in the midst, and as the fulfillment of Jesus' promise, wherever two or three are gathered in my name, I will be there. And so the Focolare communities, these little houses of usually four, five, six, are at the service then of the larger community of married people, of professionals, of small children, of elderly, and also men and women, religious priests, who also draw on the strength of the spirituality in order to live out their own vocations within the church.
Sure. And how were you yourself drawn to the movement?
My family kind of fell into the movement when I was about 8 years old. My parents went to a summer gathering called the Mariopolis, kind of on a dare, with some friends from, they had known them through Marriage Encounter, who wanted to check it out but didn't want to go alone. And so actually we went as a family. We drove from Los Angeles to Portland, Oregon without knowing anything. So my sister and I were with the small kids, and I still remember the focus of that gathering was the presence of Jesus in the Eucharist, in the Word, and in each person. And I remember as a small kid, my sister and I were starting to kind of gossip about one of the other little girls. And we stopped in our tracks and said, if Jesus is in her, we can't do this anymore. And so even as a small child, it was clear to me that I needed to change. I needed to change my way of being and my attitude toward the other little kids that were around. And so I think my family was really drawn to the simplicity and the authenticity and the path that it offered as a way of really concretely living out our Christianity. And then growing up, being with the other young people, I grew up in Los Angeles, and I found it was just a tremendous anchor and grounding point of reference in trying to kind of navigate who am I, what are my values, what do I want to hold dear in my life. And so it was a really wonderful way to stay, I think, oriented in understanding how to live Christianity as a teenager and then as a young adult. And then I think also perhaps due to this possibility to really just live concretely day by day, at a certain point I felt drawn to living in the Focolare community house. It's something I hadn't thought about before, but felt drawn to this presence of Christ in the community that just seemed to give meaning to everything, even the most ordinary things of making dinner or sweeping the floor. And so I found that it's just a wonderful source of meaning for my own life, for my own professional work. And also it's just really a joy to be working with the community, which is a beautiful group of people.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your insight into the community, into the economy of communion, and for your time today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
We want to thank you for joining us today. Be sure to check out our website. We have new video commentary and reviews of the films Fantastic Mr. Fox and Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire. Thanks also to Bill McGarvey for providing the music for the show. And we'll see you next week.